If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I am your host, Jake Jackman, today standing in for Kevin DeVries still. You can get our Twitter at EPL Roundtable and you get my Twitter at Jake Jackman with two N's.
My name is Thomas Nygren. I mostly write about Liverpool for lfcsv.se, but today I will of course talk about the Swedish national team who has reached the quarterfinal of the World Cup.
I am Jamie Smith. I'm a football journalist working for Omnisport News in the UK. I support Burnley, but today I'll be talking about England.
Thanks so much for joining me today, guys. We're all very happy after yesterday getting into the quarterfinals. I think maybe a little bit more expected for England, but still, it's the way it went about. It was just classic England, the way it went to penalties and the late goal. We got there in the end, and we've set up a quarterfinal against each other, so that will be interesting, which we'll get into later. But first, we'll start with the topics for today. And what I'd just like to touch on is just the quality of this World Cup. And I've seen some people say that it's not going to be one of the best World Cups. It's not going to be remembered as that because a lot of the top teams have gone out early. Argentina and Spain, of course, went out in the round of 16. Argentina somewhat expectedly, but Spain was surprised by the hosts. And that's, you know, that's left us with only Brazil and France, arguably Belgium, that you'd say were pre-tournament favourites. So it'd be interesting to see what you guys sort of think about whether this is good or bad for the competition. Is the variation good, or do you think the World Cup is going to be poorer because we don't have those bigger teams in the latter stages?
First of all, I want to say that I think that it's been a great World Cup. It's been playing great football, and every game in the second round was exciting. I think it was only the Brazil game who was they won with two goals. Every other game was penalties or a one goal win. So I think it's been a good tournament, and I think that a few surprises are good for these kind of tournaments, as long as some of the bigger teams are still in, because of the interest around the games becomes much bigger when there are a few surprises, and when you as a supporter can think that everything can happen. And if I think back on the World Cups when I was younger, I remember the best teams, and I also remember the teams who surprised. For example, Cameroon in 90. Personally, I lost interest in a competition like Champions League for a few years, mainly because it always were the same teams left in the end. You knew what would happen in the knockout stages, and that takes away much of the fun of the competition. This World Cup is hard to predict, and I think that makes it more interesting. But I have to say that I was happy to see Belgium turn things around against Japan, because I don't want too many of the big guns to go out before the quarterfinals. And in the end, I want the two best teams to face each other in the final. But if a few of them go out a bit early, I think that's only good for the competition. And if you look at Spain and Germany, I think that this is good for them both in the long run. They have been maybe the two best teams in the world for some time now, and this forces them to develop and change things for the future. Germany believed too much on the players from the last World Cup, and now they will probably use more of the players who won Confederations Cup. So I think that this will be good for them in the future and for the tournament as a whole now.
Yeah, I think it could go either way at this point. I agree with Thomas, it's been an absolutely fantastic World Cup. There were some murmurs early in the group stage that it wasn't a good World Cup, and I think anyone who was saying that has just been made to look very, very silly in the last week and a half or so. There's been a number of matches that are going to go down as all-time World Cup classics. Belgium-Japan with the finale like that was absolutely superb. Korea dumping out Germany, one for the ages, and Portugal, Spain, right, one of the first few days of the tournament was absolutely brilliant as well. So I think it has been an outstanding World Cup. I agree that you do want some of the big boys to stick around to the end. You want the heavyweight clashes. You want a Brazil v Germany, like we saw in the semi-finals of the last World Cup. You want games like France and Argentina that we've already had. But I think it's good to see some new faces in there. Belgium have been talked about as being favourites, one of the favourites for this World Cup, and it looks like things are finally coming together for them. But they're still a new name. They've never won the World Cup before. Uruguay obviously haven't won the World Cup for a long, long time, but they look like they're going to be contenders this time. They've come through. And even England haven't won the World Cup for so long, but look like they've got a chance of going deep into the tournament. So I think it's good to get a good mixture, but yeah, we still want to see some of those big hitter clashes. I think semi-finals that could end up being, not that I'm counting any chickens, England v Russia, for example. I don't think that's a semi-final that many neutrals will be particularly excited to see. But yeah, so far I think it's been an excellent World Cup. It just needs the quality and the excitement to continue through the rest of the knockout round, which can be very cagey. We've seen that in some of the matches so far, especially when it goes to extra time. I think it's inevitable. Colombia, England last night was very much like that. But hopefully we'll see plenty of excitement to come. I'm really enjoying it so far.
Yeah, I think I agree with both of you there. It's interesting the way the brackets have worked out, because you've sort of got that one side with all the sort of the bigger teams going up against each other. So in the quarters you've got Uruguay and France, and then you've got Brazil and Belgium. Obviously that seems like quite a good side of the bracket with four good teams that you're not really surprised that they've got there. Maybe Uruguay, but you know, they've looked quite well organised, and they've got two really good strikers, so that, you know, that's a really good side. But it's the other side of the bracket that's interesting, because you've got four teams now that Spain have gone out that would probably have taken a quarter final beforehand, but now one of them is going to be a finalist. You'd probably say Croatia are the best of the lot, although I wasn't that impressed with them against Denmark and the way that went. They could have easily have gone out. So that was interesting. And then you've got England and Sweden, who I think England beforehand, I would have been happy with a quarterfinal. I'm sure Thomas is over the moon with a quarterfinal, although I think they're being somewhat underestimated in the British press, or maybe not the press, but a lot of the supporters thinking that if we'd got through Colombia, that, you know, we've got an easier game. But Sweden, you know, knocked out Italy in the qualifiers. They've got through to knocked out Germany, or at least had a hand in that. And now have gone and beaten Switzerland, so they're not a bad team, and in any team when you get to the quarterfinals, it can't be a bad team. So it's interesting. I agree, it's been a really exciting tournament. I think the late goals have helped. I think VAR has been well implemented compared to what it was in England this season, so that's been good to see. There's still a little bit of confusion, but you're going to get that. But I think that's been a really good addition to the World Cup, and it's definitely, in terms of drama, that South Korea goal is going to be remembered for a long time as a great World Cup moment. So I agree. I think it's been a really good World Cup so far, but I think it's got a little bit to go to be a great World Cup, and I think it all depends on, you know, who wins it, what the semi-finals are like, and things like that, and if any players step up, because we've not only lost, you know, some big nations this past week, we've also lost to Lionel Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo, you know, big players are going out, and it'll be interesting to see if anybody can sort of step up and make an impression as sort of the third one. And I guess the person most likely to do that we're going to come on to next, and that's Neymar, who's been a headline story in the last two World Cups. He was the poster boy at the Brazil World Cup, did very well until he got injured, and then this year again he's Brazil's big hope, and it seems like a lot goes through him, and he's been making a lot of headlines for the wrong reasons, his sort of diving, his play antics, the way he sort of just rolls around for ages, it seems. And it's interesting the way Neymar's career has gone. I think it was expected he'd gone to be the best player in the world. I'm not sure if he's quite reached that yet. And his move to PSG is questionable as well, because I think that's sort of limited his ceiling. But I just want to know what you guys think of Neymar, and whether he will go down as sort of one of the greats, at least in modern football, and do his dramatic streak away from him as a player. Because I know he's making a lot of headlines, you know, in England, he's making a lot of headlines on social media. It's interesting to see how people are reacting to him. So I'd like to see you guys' thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think it's a tough question, because here in Sweden, we only see him when he plays in the national team, because not many people here watch PSG nowadays, that Zlatan isn't there. So the games that he play now is the games that we're going to see here. And the biggest talk about him here now is the way he acts on the field. Partly I can understand him because the way he's treated sometimes is maybe a bigger problem than him rolling around on the grass. But if, in Sweden, if you ask someone to describe Neymar, most of them will mention the dramatics before they talk about the way he played. And that is not a good sign if you want to go down as one of the greatest. I think that he has acted worse in this World Cup than he did in Brazil 4 years ago. And maybe it is because of how it ended for him that time, because the injury in the quarterfinal kept him out of the semifinals. And maybe this is his way to protect himself, some kind of a self-defense from the way he's treated by the defenders. But I, too, is annoyed by the way he acts sometimes. And for example, in the game against Mexico, when they stomped on him, the way he rolled on the grass was embarrassing to see. And of course, the defenders are hard on him, and I can understand if he wants to go down easy sometimes. But I think he hurts himself with his acting the way he does now. It will be more difficult for him to get free kicks and easier for the defenders to get away with their behavior against him if he keeps on acting like he does now. And the referees will assume that he's acting a bit like they do with Suarez and Pepe and so on. Who has Suarez, for example, has a trouble to get the free kicks now in another way that maybe 8 years ago when he wasn't so well known among the referees. I think it's a bit early to say if this will affect his legacy, because in the end, I think it depends more on how well Brazil do in the tournament. If they win and he scores some of the important goals, he will be remembered. He isn't the first player to cheat. If you look at Diego Maradona, his hand of God didn't keep him from being maybe the greatest of all time. So if Brazil win and Neymar is the man who makes them the best team in the tournament, he will be remembered. Maybe not as one of the greatest, but of course we will remember him because he's a player that you notice when he's on the field and he does some great things. The goal against Mexico and the assist for the second goal, he is their star player, and if they win the tournament, he has to go down as at least one of the greatest of this tournament. And if he does that, he's 30, I think, in the next World Cup, so he has still some time left.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting tournament for Neymar, especially given, as Jake mentioned, Messi's gone home, Ronaldo's gone home. Two of the players that you may be expected to carry their country through to the latter stage of the tournament have not been able to do so. I think the major change for Brazil over the last 4 years is they're not as reliant on Neymar as they were for the home World Cup. Remember that World Cup, they have Fred playing up front, and now they've got a choice of Firmino, Jesus, two of the best strikers in European football, Coutinho, the second most expensive player in world football, so it's not like they're short of attacking talent now. Neymar's still obviously the undoubted star of the team, and they still look for him to create things and score the goals, but I don't think they're nearly as reliant on him as they were. The play-out team, I do think it spoils it a little bit. The way he was acting during the Mexico game, where he's rolling over and over and over, when he got a little tap on the ankle from, was it Leon? It was just ridiculous. And I think it's getting to the point where a lot of people within football are now calling him out for that. And it's disappointing that a player with all of Neymar's gifts and ability feels that he has to embark on these sorts of histrionics. I think it's understandable to an extent when he has had the injury problems that he's had. Obviously, the last World Cup, he was effectively kicked out of the game with the injury that he had, meant that he couldn't play in the semi-final. That had a massive impact on Brazil getting hammered by Germany. So that's probably in his mind a little bit. He's trying to protect himself with some of his antics. But that's probably the kindest thing you can say about him. There's other players that have been Neymar's level and better who get similar punishment, and they just get on with the game. You don't tend to see Messi do that. Certainly not to the same level as Neymar. And you'd think playing at Barcelona with him, he would have seen that Messi just gets on with it. And I think that puts defenders off from thinking that they can target him. Neymar, for me, almost invites that sort of treatment by giving the players the reaction, the over-the-top reaction that maybe they're after. In terms of his legacy, I think it is a difficult one to judge at this stage. I think if he goes on and helps Brazil to win this World Cup, maybe the next World Cup, then he's obviously going to go down as certainly a great of this era. Obviously, there's so many Brazilian greats that it's difficult to rank him. It's difficult to think where he ranks in their sort of pantheon of brilliant players. But it looks like as long as he stays fit and healthy, he will go on and become Brazil's top goal scorer. His international goals record is absolutely insane. And if he keeps that up, he's going to be one of the top goal scorers in international football history, not just in Brazil's football history. So in terms of pure numbers, I think he's certainly on the way to securing greatness, legendary status, however you want to call it. But yeah, I'm of the opinion that a lot of his behaviour on the pitch is unnecessary, uncalled for, and it does sort of spoil our view of what should be a fantastic player to watch.
Yeah, the only reason I raise the question of it is legacy and sort of where he ranks it within the both the Brazilian and the current greats is that, you know, as Jamie mentioned, he's on track to become their highest scorer. He's currently 20 behind Pelé, which, you know, considering he's only 26, he's probably going to easily go past that and could, you know, as Jamie mentioned, go on and be one of the top goal scorers for international football, which would be a remarkable achievement. He's also had 89 caps already, and Cafu is the record cap holder with 142. That's well within his grasp if he stays fit and stays at the top of the game. He's probably going to go and break that as well. So he's gonna tally up a few records for Brazil as long as he stays healthy and as long as he's, you know, stays at the top of his game, which at the moment it looks like he will do. I think that the move to PSG, I'm not sure if that's been the best thing for his career in his sort of mentality and the way he approaches things. He does seem to be a bit of a, I mean, all great players are a bit of a, you know, a little bit arrogant, and he's definitely that. And I think the way he sort of controls the dressing room at PSG definitely sort of has had a negative effect on him, and the play acting, you know, what he did against Mexico was ridiculous. He was down for, you know, he could have gone and made a cup of tea in the time he was down, and he'd barely even be in touch. It was ridiculous. I just, that does sour what he is. I think it surprised me that he's already 26, because I think I still think of him as a young player, but he's getting to that age where he needs to really go and push on, and this tournament is a great opportunity for him. Yes, they're on the tough half of the draw, but Brazil, they're the current favourites to win the competition. I think they've looked the most well-rounded team so far. I think they've looked pretty good at the back, and they've offered something in attack. I think, as Jamie mentioned, they've got a lot more players than they did in the previous World Cup, or at least a lot more players at sort of nearing the top of European football. You've got Philippe Coutinho as well, who's been excellent in this tournament. Gabriel Jesus, Roberto Firmino. They've both been, you know, very good over the last 12 months for Manchester City and Liverpool. Thomas, as a Liverpool fan, I'll just come to you on this one quickly. Do you think that Firmino should be starting for Brazil? Because I know I see a lot of people talking about that every time the Brazil lineup gets announced. He obviously came on and scored the other day. Jesus hasn't had his best tournament. I think he's worked hard and he's definitely offered something. But in front of goal, he hasn't been the best. Do you think that Firmino deserves to maybe a starting role?
Yeah, I think he deserves to start because he hasn't played too many minutes, but I think he has achieved a lot when he has coming onto the pitch. He scored just 2 minutes after getting on in the game against Mexico, and he is a very good footballer, Roberto Firmino, and he does a lot of things that Jesus doesn't do for the team. He creates chances, and now that he has scored, I think they need Firmino in between Willian and Neymar to give them some more space. His movement is, in my opinion, better than Jesus. And since Gabriel Jesus hasn't scored yet, I think that it's time to show Roberto Firmino some confidence and let him start against Belgium. But I'm quite sure that he will keep on playing the same team for the next round as well, because Tite seems to like the way that they play now, and to have Roberto Firmino on the bench at least give them an opportunity to change the game if Belgium comes ahead. So if I was the coach for Brazil, I would start Firmino in every game, but I watch Firmino week in, week out, so maybe I'm not the right person to judge him. against the other players.
Yeah, just one more point on Neymar before I think we're going to move on to something else. As Jake mentioned, he's 26 now. He's sort of approaching the age where we consider forward players to be in their prime, and he still behaves like a teenager. I remember watching him at the Olympics when he played for Brazil in England at the London Olympics, and he was a young player then, and it sort of made sense that he was behaving a bit childishly in the way he reacted to challenges and getting over-emotional on the pitch. You could kind of understand it because he was new to the game and still developing, but now he should be a complete package as a player, and I think the antics are just a bit of a distraction from not just his skill, but the Brazil team as a whole. And although it works as a team much better than it did 4 years ago, as I've already said, I think Neymar, he just dominates the attention so much that it could overshadow the team and maybe just take focus away from what should be a very good chance to win the World Cup. I think his over-emotional responses are just a bit ridiculous, really. I can't imagine an England player behaving like that. Can you imagine Jordan Henderson bursting into tears at the full-time whistle because they'd won a second-round game? I don't think so.
No, I think that's a good point. It's sort of over-emotionless. It's over-showing of emotions. You often see him crying at the end of games. And when if he wants to be compared with the best players in the world, if he wants to be at the level of Ronaldo and Messi, who are just so professional, they focus all on their own game. And I think Neymar is... He's in the Ronaldo mould of wanting it to be about him, but I think Ronaldo does it in a, just a more professional way, and that's why it sort of comes off more. And I agree, I don't think he's developed a lot mentally over the sort of last 3 or 4 years, and it's definitely a threat to Brazil. If a game's not going their way, Neymar could take away from what the team are going for. That is definitely a worry. But just moving into to the country-specific discussion now, we're going to talk about Sweden and England. So, you know, we'll face each other on Saturday at 3 o'clock. So that's going to be... It's a huge game because whichever team wins, they've completely gone past what everybody expected from them, especially from Sweden. So we'll start with you on this one, Thomas. Just want to know your thoughts on yesterday's game. I know Switzerland had a lot of the ball, perhaps had more chances as well, but Sweden just looks so solid at the back, and there seems to be a real team spirit there. I've seen a lot of people compare them to Iceland, what they were a couple of years ago, but sort of a more streamlined Iceland, a more effective Iceland. Do you think that's a fair comparison?
Yeah, I think so, because this Swedish team, well, it's based on the same things that Iceland was during the time with Lars Lagerbäck, who's a Swedish coach, has gone through the same school as our coach, Janne Andersson. The game against Switzerland, I understand it maybe wasn't the most fun game to watch from a neutral perspective, but personally, I can't remember the last time I was this nervous when Sweden played. Maybe it was in the quarterfinal against Romania in 94. And looking back at the game now, I think that Switzerland never really got close to hurt us. They had one good opportunity in the first half, but they missed the target. And I think it was interesting to see that we defended quite high when Sommer had the ball for the goal kick. We didn't let them play the ball from the back, and I think that that was a problem for them. And after that, of course, we defended in a very impressive way, like we did during the whole tournament. And we didn't give Shaqiri any space at all. And when you don't give him any space, he tend to play quite badly. Yesterday, it was mostly crosses that were headed away by our defenders. This game was the fifth time in the past six games that we didn't concede a goal. We didn't concede in any of the games against Italy before the World Cup, and we didn't concede against South Korea, Mexico, and now we didn't concede against Switzerland. So this defense is world class. Too bad, though, that we didn't play very well in the offense. I'm still waiting for Marcus Berg to score and for Emil Forsberg to be as creative as we need him to be. Even though Forsberg scored yesterday, I think he was one of the players who underperformed in Sweden. We need him to be a bit better if we want to get past the next round. Before the World Cup, everyone, me included, said that we needed Marcus Berg to score if we wanted to achieve anything at all. And he's still without a goal in this tournament, and still we're in the quarterfinal. So this team has a capability of making each other better. And even though Marcus Berg doesn't score now, he works really hard together with Toivonen up front. And I think that the defenders that they play against really hate to play them, because Toivonen is a very dirty player. He uses his elbows and likes to kick the defenders and so on. So maybe they're not the best football players, but they do some good things for this team. But of course, the most important part of this team is the defense, and the back four has been amazing during the tournament. Now Mikael Lustig will be out against England because of the suspension, and that is maybe a problem for us. But when we missed Victor Lindelöf against Korea, and we played Pontus Jansson instead, then that was no problem at all. So the thing that Janne Andersson has done to this team is to make sure that everyone knows what to do when they play. So it doesn't really matter which players who are on the field, because they know what to do when they're on, and that is something that we have lacked in the Swedish team for many years. When we had Erik Hamrén before Janne Andersson, it was the opposite way. We had Zlatan, who knew what he was supposed to do, and the other player needed to adapt to him. Now the right back knows exactly what we want from him, and the left back knows exactly what we want from him. And if you're a small country like Sweden and don't have many star players, that is how you need to go to the World Cup, because we can't play attacking football against teams that are superior to us. When you look at the names and the technique of the players, we need to do the best with what we've got. And it's hard to say anything else, but this team has done something special. Here in Sweden now, everyone is talking about the similarities with the summer of 94, who is almost like a legend here in Sweden when we won the bronze medals. That was also a very hot summer, and the team from 94 wasn't expected to go anywhere in that tournament, but they grew together, and today everyone in that team is a hero here in Sweden. And now the newspapers talk about Andreas Granqvist as a player to walk in those footsteps and be the next big Swedish football hero in another way than Zlatan, who is of course the best player who has ever been from Sweden. But it is something else when you have a national team that go far in the tournament. And now we're in the quarterfinals, and I don't think that anyone here in Sweden expected that kind of achievement. So I'm very happy with what Janne Andersson has done to this national team.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, it's interesting that as soon as Zlatan sort of goes from the team, they go, you know, to a quarterfinal of the World Cup. It does speak volumes of what maybe a smaller nation needs rather than a superstar. They need a team and following into the footsteps of Iceland. One player that's really impressed me for Sweden, who you didn't mention there, was Victor Lindelöf, who, of course, joined Manchester United for a ridiculous fee last summer. Didn't really impress in the Premier League, looked a little bit out of his depth. And he's been absolutely superb at the World Cup. And, you know, if you're looking this summer at centre-backs you could sign, if you knew that he hadn't already had that big move, he's standing out as the one you'd want to go for. Do you think that this World Cup could really push him on, you know, both for the national team and for Manchester United?
Yeah, I hope so, because he deserves to play more games for Manchester United than he did last year. Of course, they defend in a different way than Sweden does, because we defend quite low in with a very compact team, and Andreas Granqvist next to him is a really solid player, and maybe if you play for Manchester United, they expect to be more to do more in the offense, and maybe they don't get the same protection from the midfield as he does when he plays for Sweden. But you can see in this tournament he is a great defender, and maybe it's time for Mourinho to give him a few games to let him show what he's got, because I don't think that he is a worse player than Chris Smalling or Phil Jones or those kind of players who has played before him this season. And he's still young and he gets better. So I think that if Manchester United doesn't play him this season, they need to let him move on to another club, because he doesn't deserve to sit on the bench for another season.
Yeah, just before we come on to England with Jamie, I just want to ask you what your thoughts are on the quarterfinal, and are you happy that you got England rather than Colombia? I'd just be interested to hear your thoughts as an outsider to the England camp.
Well, personally, I always want England to do good, because as a Liverpool supporter, this season I wanted Jordan Henderson to be successful in the World Cup, but when I realized that we were going to face England or Colombia, I wanted England to lose yesterday, because I think that Colombia would suit us much better than England does. It will be an interesting quarterfinal, of course, but I think the way England plays suits us a bit worse than Colombia, and I'm really afraid to face Harry Kane, because we haven't conceded many goals so far, but we haven't really faced a world-class striker like he is. And most of the teams we have faced have also been a bit shorter than us. So on the set pieces, they haven't been able to create anything against us. And England has more players who is dangerous in the air. You have Harry Maguire and John Stones, and you have Harry Kane. And so I think that England suits us a bit worse than Colombia. But on the other hand, I think that the Swedish team and the Swedish players knows England a bit better, and we have a good record against England. So I think there was a time about where we faced each other almost every competition, and it was often that we could get a draw. We lost in the European Championships in Ukraine. But apart from that, we usually too good against England, so hopefully we can do that now. But I'm impressed with what England has achieved so far. I didn't think that they were going to be in the quarterfinal.
No, I don't think we're going to be in the quarterfinal either, Thomas. So there we go. We're moving on to England now, and after yesterday, I think the whole country is sort of still in elation at what happened. Winning a penalty shootout for the first time in around 20 years is just remarkable. The way it happened, they looked so cool. Didn't really look like they were panicking, and the fact that they were led by Gareth Southgate, who of course famously missed a penalty, it just seems like it's gone full circle from there. Jamie, what were your thoughts on the game yesterday and England's performance?
Yeah, it's difficult one to analyse, isn't it? I felt England were in control for the large part of the game without really creating an awful lot. I think that was partly down to Colombia's tactics. They obviously decided to be very physical, quite defensive, brought the game up with a lot of tactical fouls as well, made it difficult for England to create. But I think a lot of the players that you would expect in the England side to be creative didn't play particularly well. Dele Alli was quite poor. Seems like he's carrying an injury or two that's making it difficult for him. Raheem Sterling, he hasn't really had a good World Cup either, and Jesse Lingard, I don't think he performed particularly well either. So the players behind the striker have been a bit of a problem for me over the last couple of games. But it seemed like England were holding on quite well. They were dealing with the pressure reasonably well. Obviously, Jordan Pickford made a fantastic save right at the end, and they scored from the resulting corner, and that can happen. You can concede from a set piece. It's just a part of the game, isn't it, where sometimes you get beaten by a powerful player in the air. Yerry Mina scored three games in a row at the World Cup, so he's obviously a massive threat from set pieces. And England were a bit unfortunate, maybe, in that regard. I did feel when it went to extra time that we allowed Colombia to really take the front foot, and they were on top for that period, albeit without creating an awful lot. And then Eric Dier probably had the biggest chance to win the game and avoid the penalties, but missed the free header. So I'd be lying if I said I was confident when it did go to penalties, but the way the players approached the shootout, I thought, was completely different to how England have in penalty shootouts in the past. As you say, Gareth Southgate has got his own penalty history. Famously, in England, did a pizza commercial where he had a bag on his head after he missed a penalty at Euro 96. He's come an awful long way from that, hasn't he? I've never been that much of a fan of Southgate, to be honest, but he's winning me over slowly during the World Cup. A lot of the things he says makes a lot of sense. The approach from the way they're prepared for the tournament seemed absolutely spot on. The players seem happy and comfortable in their environment, which is a big thing that managers time and time again seem to get wrong with England. They either go far too far in one direction and coddle them too much and they all get bored, or they give them too much freedom and the players take advantage. And Southgate seems to have got a nice balance and everyone seems really happy and settled, which I think makes a big difference. But yeah, I didn't see us winning on penalties at all. I thought it was all set for a repeat of the many, many penalty shootout exits England have had at major tournaments before. And the fact it's the first time England have ever won a penalty shootout at the World Cup speaks for itself, really. And I think what players, including Harry Kane, said after the game, that it will give them fresh belief for the rest of the tournament. I think that speaks volumes. There's no fear in this England team, and that's been the problem that's held the team back in the last few tournaments.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's absolutely huge to win a penalty shootout. They are not great to watch, not great to be a part of either as a player or a fan. But if you do win, I think it's probably the best way to go through a tie, especially this early in the knockout stages. You've got, still got three games to go if you go that far. But it really builds momentum. It brings everybody together, builds belief, and it's such a good way. It's sort of like winning the playoffs, is how I'd compare it to. It's not the best comparison, but I think going up through the playoffs is probably the best way to get promoted. But it's also the worst way, you know, to go out. It's also the most nerve-wracking. So I think it's massive that we won that way. I don't think we've had played. I'm not getting carried away with England. I don't think we've played as well as some people making out. I think there are still flaws in the team. I agree with the central midfielders, or at least the attacking ones weren't great yesterday. I think Raheem Sterling's trying, but he's not a central player, and I think that's showing. He's quite easily bullied in there. I think Ali, yeah, I agree. He doesn't look fully fit, and Jesse Lingard, he's a bit hit and miss. I still don't think he can, you know, deliver every 3 or 4 days as we were asking him to do. I was slightly surprised Loftus-Cheek didn't get a game. I thought he looked really good against Belgium, probably the only good thing about that game. Also looked good against Panama. Yes, it's only Panama, but he looked good. And he, of course, made a bit of a difference against Tunisia, bringing a bit of impetus. So I just want to ask you your thoughts on Loftus-Cheek and Marcus Rashford as well. Do you think those two are players that maybe we should look to bring in for the quarterfinal?
I think they're the two obvious ones, aren't they, that if you were going to make changes, they're probably the two that you try and get into the team. Loftus-Cheek, I think his reputation exceeds what he's delivered so far. I think because he's a very technically accomplished midfielder, keeps possession very well, he seems comfortable driving forward, people got very excited very early, but the fact of the matter is he's done absolutely nothing for club and country really so far. He's very young, very inexperienced, so I mean, it would be asking a lot to throw him into a World Cup quarterfinal when he doesn't really have big game experience. He had a reasonable season at Crystal Palace, albeit disrupted by injuries. He's played a handful of times for England, but none of them in a pressurised environment, so I think it would be difficult to ask him to go into that situation. But if Dele Alli is as unfit as he looks, I think that's probably a change that they have to seriously think about. Loftus-Cheek might give the team a bit more in terms of unlocking a tight defence. I think everyone expects Sweden to sit back a little bit, soak up England's pressure. And that's probably what the team lacks, really, someone in a central area who can knit the play together, deliver the final pass in the final third. And maybe that's what Loftus-Cheek can bring to the game. I'm certainly not building him up because, like I say, I think he's got a long way to go to become the player that people seem to think he is already. But if he is as good as people think, maybe the World Cup quarterfinal is a stage to show it. As far as the other change goes, I feel really bad for Raheem Sterling because obviously his build-up to the tournament was overshadowed by some of the ridiculous treatment in the tabloid newspapers in England. And I think he's dealt with that negative attention in an exemplary way, really. I think for someone who's still a very young player to handle all this negative attention, all this pressure from outside in such a calm way, in such a mature way. I think it reflects really well on Raheem Sterling as a human. As a player, I don't think he's had a particularly good World Cup so far. Like you say, I think he's trying really hard, but it's not really coming off for him. And yeah, I'm not sure playing sort of alongside Kane or just off Kane in the number 10 role, I don't think it's really worked out for him. I think Sterling, more than anyone else in the England team, is the one who you notice really misses all the world-class creative players he has around him at club level. Obviously, at Manchester City, he's got Kevin De Bruyne and David Silva and Bernardo Silva and Leroy Sané to link up with. He's playing for England with players of a similar standard to him rather than players who are much, much better. And I think that's been quite easy to see at times. I'm not sure I'd put Rashford in, though. I think Rashford as an impact substitute is a really, really strong option. And although he looked really confident in one of the build-up games, he scored that amazing goal against Costa Rica, didn't he, in Leeds, I think maybe he's better as an impact option at this point. So I'd certainly think about Loftus-Cheek for Ali, depending on his fitness, but I'd probably give Sterling another game.
Yeah, and just before we move on to player watch, I just want to ask what you think would represent success for England now, taking into account, you know, what's happened so far in the draw ahead. I know a lot of people are getting carried away with where we are in the draw. I think that any of those four teams could go to the final. I don't think, you know, the way this World Cup's gone, anybody can beat anybody, or at least, you know, those four teams, anyone could go through. Do you think if they went out on Saturday, would that be a disappointment, or would you think a quarterfinal's progress and that's something to build on?
I think it would be disappointing. That's not a slight on Sweden, but I think whenever you lose a World Cup quarterfinal, it's disappointing because you think about what could have been. The way the draw has opened up has obviously got people very excited in England, and rightly so, I think. The World Cup happens every 4 years, and quite often we've been rubbish at it. So the fact that we've looked okay, got out of the group stage and won a knockout game, first time we've won a knockout game in 12 years at any major tournament. So I think quarterfinals was an achievement that most people would have been pretty happy with at the start. And if we'd lost to, say, Germany or Brazil in the quarterfinals, everyone would have gone, yeah, you know what, that's fair enough. They're just better than us. But I think Sweden will look at the quarterfinal in a similar way, and they'll think, England, we can beat them. Semi-finals, Russia or Croatia, we can beat them. So, like you say, everyone in this half of the group now is thinking, we can get to the World Cup final. I think it's going to be really interesting how the teams cope with this pressure now, because it's a totally different type of pressure once you've, firstly, achieved the expectation that you set out to, but secondly, suddenly have a brand new expectation because of completely outside factors being the draw and what's happened to the other big teams. So the fact that it's Sweden, I think, does mean people will be a bit more downbeat if it does go wrong. I'm not expecting England to win whatsoever. I think it's going to be a really tight game and could go either way. But I think it would be disappointing just because England probably will start the game as favourites.
Yeah, moving into player watch now, I just want to ask each of you a little look to the club side now. Over the course of the World Cup, obviously, a lot of players catch the eye and they say it's a bad time to buy players based on a tournament, which I'd agree with. But of course, we all see players and we think they wouldn't look bad in our own club teams. Has there been any players that have stood out of this World Cup that you think that you'd quite like your club to sign? We'll start with you, Thomas, of Liverpool.
Yeah, well, as a Liverpool supporter, I'm not very fond of signing players based on a good World Cup. Not after El Hadji Diouf and Salif Diao in 2002. But I really like what I've seen from the Colombian defender, Mina, I think his name is, who scored yesterday. It would be interesting to see him next to Van Dijk in Liverpool. But since he plays for Barcelona, it won't be easy to get him now. And since Lovren has been great in this tournament as well, maybe that shouldn't be the priority. Liverpool need a goalkeeper, and Alisson in Brazil is the obvious choice. He would be a great signing for us, and I think that he has done good in this World Cup, even though Brazil is such a good team that he hasn't been put to test so much. But he's my first choice, and if you look at the players who, at least to me, wasn't very known before the World Cup, I really liked Lozano from Mexico. He would be an interesting addition to the Liverpool squad. He's only 22 years old, and he is a bit similar to Mané and Salah in the way that he's very quick and has great technique. He has done well in the Dutch league. Of course, that league isn't as good as it was a few years ago, but he scored against Germany. He was their only threat against Sweden, and I think that he would be a great fit for Liverpool.
Yeah, Jamie, same question to you for Burnley.
Yeah, it's a tricky one for Burnley, really, because obviously most players at the World Cup are probably massively out of our price range. A lot of these players are playing at clubs that are already much bigger and richer than Burnley, so they wouldn't even be on our radar. I'd be surprised if we've even scouted the tournament in any great detail, to be honest, because everyone knows about every player now, just the way global football works. I was going to mention Lozano, actually, but I think the fact that Thomas is talking about him as potentially going to Liverpool. I know he's been linked with Arsenal as well. I think that demonstrates that he's already probably a player that we wouldn't be able to attract, but I've been really impressed with him. I think pace, direct, really dangerous, likes to get in the final third, get in the box. In the first half of the Brazil game, he looked like the player that could perhaps win it for Mexico. I thought he outperformed Neymar, certainly for the first 20-25 minutes or so before Neymar really started to get his grip on the contest. So I think it will be interesting to see him in the Premier League for sure, although probably unrealistic that we could sign him. The other player that I've really been impressed with was, for Japan actually, Inoue. I've seen a bit of him in La Liga actually and liked him a lot. I think he scored against Barcelona and became the first Japanese player ever to score against Barcelona. He's actually already moved this summer. I think he signed for Real Betis. So again, not one that's realistic, but I've really enjoyed watching him. He's been one of the players that I didn't really know that much about, although I've seen bits that I think has really heightened his reputation a bit at the tournament.
Yeah, we move into the match previews now. The quarter-final stage, we got a few of the teams we expected to see there, a few that we didn't. I'll just run through the games now. We got France, Uruguay and Brazil and Belgium on one half of the draw. And then we've, of course, got England and Sweden and Croatia and Russia on the other side of the draw. I just want to get your guys' thoughts on these fixtures. I know we've touched a lot of on England and Sweden, so we probably should talk about the other three games. Which one do you think sort of most stands out, and which teams do you sort of see going through to the semi-finals?
Well, the standout game for me is Belgium against Brazil. I think there may be, together with France, I think they're two best teams in the tournament. And I think it would be interesting to see Belgium play Brazil, because Brazil has looked really solid at the back in this tournament. And I don't think that Belgium has been as good defending. So I think that that game will show a bit how good Belgium really is, because the group stage for Belgium was, with the first two games was quite easy, and the England game, it's hard to draw any conclusions from that game. And they were real shaken by Japan, so I'm not sure how good Belgium really is yet. And after the Brazil game, we will know if Belgium is the real deal. So that is the game that I'm looking forward to the most. And I think that that Brazil will show us in that game that they are the best team in this tournament.
Yeah, I think on paper that certainly stands out as the game that's got the potential to be the most exciting. Totally agree about Belgium. I think at the back they look like they can be got at, even though England didn't manage to score against them with what was essentially a reserve team. But I think the way that Japan set about that tie really demonstrated that Belgium can be opened up. And I think if they play with such an open system against Brazil, they're going to risk being taken apart, really. The flip side is Belgium are probably going to test Brazil defensively in a way that nobody else has at the tournament so far. So that certainly looks like it's going to be the match to make sure you see. Obviously, watch all the games, but if you can only watch one, watch that one. I'm also really looking forward to France against Uruguay. France arguably have the best squad in the tournament. The depth of the talent available to France is absolutely ridiculous. You could probably have a squad of French players who didn't make it into their last 23, and they could probably get to the quarterfinals of the World Cup themselves. So there was a lot of options for Didier Deschamps, and I think he's still trying to work out how to get all his best players into his best team, and I think that could be where they fall down a little bit. Uruguay have been, under the radar, one of the best teams at the tournament so far. They've looked incredibly solid at the back. Obviously, the Atletico Madrid pair know each other very well. Diego Godin, arguably the best defender, out-and-out defender in world football right now. And obviously, they're going up against a club colleague in Antoine Griezmann, who's been telling everyone to listen how Uruguayan he feels in the build-up to the game. So there's a lot of little club-related subplots around that game. I think when you get to this stage of the tournament, managers have a real impact as well. Didier Deschamps, although he's coached France at more games than anyone else now, I think he's passed the previous record holder, he's still a bit unconvincing for me. The way that France play, considering the talent that they've got available, it's just not as exciting as it should be. Obviously, Mbappe was sensational against Argentina, and Pogba had a really good game as well, but I still don't think we've seen France play as well as they really should, considering the quality they've got, certainly going forward. Whether they can get through Uruguay, who, like I say, such a tight defence, best defence in the tournament so far, I think that's going to be really interesting. And I think Oscar Tabarez has the potential to out-tactic Didier Deschamps. So that one might be one for the purists, maybe, if Uruguay decide they're going to go out to try and stifle France. I think it's telling that myself and Thomas have both chosen the quarterfinals in the stacked side of the draw. I think Russia v Croatia and England v Sweden have massive potential to be absolutely dreadful games. If you're not interested in any of the teams involved, I don't think they're going to have much to offer the neutrals at all. I don't think there's going to be much entertainment or excitement at all. But I think Russia could spring another shock, actually. Croatia were quite poor in their round of 16 game. Russia have a lot of momentum, and I think being the home nation offers a lot to their chances as well.
Yeah, it would be quite remarkable if Russia do go through to the semi-final, considering they were written off.
Absolutely. The Russian press were saying it's the worst Russian team of all time.
And they could go on and get to the semi-final, and maybe even the final. Who knows? They've really, you know, looked really, really quite good. I think their manager, who's come in quite late, is set them up really well. And in Zuba, Golovin, you know, they've got a couple of players that are in form. So that would be, I definitely agree. I think they could easily go through to the semi-final. I just want to quickly touch on players as well. Of course, I think it's at this stage of the competition where you see the best players step up, the ones that are going to go on and win player of the tournament, get top goal scorer. Are there any players that you expect to have a really big impact in their quarterfinal?
Personally, I've been very impressed with Luka Modric so far, at least in the group stage. And one of the biggest points in this tournament so far for me, apart from the Swedish games, is when he scored the second penalty in the penalty shootout against Denmark. To watch his face when he was walking towards the penalty spot was it was a strong moment. And when he scored that goal and Croatia came through, I think that was very important for him. And I think that he will shine in the quarterfinal against Russia because he's a great player, of course. And now that Croatia is past the first knockout round, I think that they will maybe be a bit more confident. And they have a great team, and Luka Modric is their best player. And I would predict them to go to the final from the four teams on Sweden's half. And if they want to do that, Luka Modric has to be good. So I think that he will shine, at least in the quarterfinal.
Yeah, I agree. I think Modric had a really good tournament up until the round of 16 game. Obviously, I've already talked about Diego Godin. I think he's an absolutely fantastic defender. I think the other player for Uruguay who's going to have to shine if they are going to get through the France game and beyond is Edinson Cavani. Obviously, there's concerns over his fitness after he limped off not long after scoring his second goal in the Portugal win. But I think he'll probably play even if he's not 100% fit. I haven't heard what the exact latest is on that, but I think players at this stage, when you get to the World Cup quarterfinal, even if you're 65-70% fit, I think you play. It's fair to say I've not always been known as the biggest fan of Edinson Cavani. I think he misses an awful lot of chances for someone considered an elite striker. The number of goals he scores at PSG, don't think that really tells the full story, because I think most top strikers would score absolutely loads of goals for PSG. What I have noticed at the World Cup so far is just how much work rate he puts into it for Uruguay. I don't know whether he's more motivated playing for his country or it's the way that the team's set up that they have to defend from the front in a way that PSG just don't. But his work rate has really impressed me, and his partnership with Luis Suarez is obviously very dangerous, both in an attacking sense in that they both offer a lot of goal threat and they obviously link up very well. They combine in very dangerous areas, but also the way that they set the tone for the way Uruguay defend as a team by pressing so hard up the pitch. And I just think France are going to find that very difficult to work with, because without descending into stereotypical cliches, France seems to have a bit more of a laid-back approach about the way they go about their football.
Before we wrap up, I just want to get each of your opinions and score predictions for the England-Sweden game. Thomas, you confident of going through? What's your prediction for the game?
Well, I think I haven't predicted a win for Sweden yet, and I've been wrong for every game, so I don't think we will win this one, but watching Sweden play this this tournament, I've seen that we can beat every team, and even though England are favourites, I think that we have a decent chance to go through to the semi-final, but we need to score first. We have scored first in every game so far, and since we're hard to score against, it's important for us to be the first team to score in the game. So I really fear Harry Kane. As I said before, he's the first world-class striker that Granqvist and Lindelöf has to face in this tournament. And if he is at his best, maybe he can hurt us. But Janne Andersson will make sure that England has a hard time. And we will have a great tactic, and we'll know how to hurt England. But then the question is if we are able to, because if you look at the players on the field, England is a better team. We will be out Mikael Lustig, who is suspended, but Emil Kraft will play instead of him, and I don't think it will matter a lot. The big question is if Albin Ekdal will be fit enough to play, and if he is out, I think we will miss him a lot. Sebastian Larsson will be back from his suspension, and he will be, in that case, he will play together with Gustav Svensson. But I think that even if Albin Ekdal is a bit injured, I can't see him out of a quarterfinal in the World Cup for Sweden, because it's the first time since 94. And in 94, I think it was the first time since 1958. So it doesn't happen very often. My prediction would be maybe a 1-1 draw after 90 minutes. And then we defend ourselves to the penalties, and then it's up to Robin Olsen and the English penalty ghost.
And Jamie, your prediction for the game?
I think very similar, to be honest. I think Kane's an interesting one, isn't he? Because he scored 6 goals at the World Cup. Half of those have been penalties. 2 were headers from basically on the line, and 1 hit him and went in. So it's too clear in the rest of the Golden Boot, but it's difficult to argue that he's had an outstanding World Cup. Maybe this is a game where he really fires and leads England on. Obviously, he's England captain. He scored a hell of a lot of goals for Spurs in the last few years, and he's really starting to catch fire for England. He's levelled a 70-year-old record in scoring in 6 games in a row, so that's obviously motivating him a great deal. I do think it's going to be really, really close, really tight. I think Sweden will probably defend deep, make it as difficult as possible for England to break them down. I don't think they'll be quite as physical, as dirty even, as Colombia were. That might play into England's favour a bit if they don't have to contend with those sorts of tactics as well. I agree with Thomas's prediction, to be honest. I think it's going to be very close. Probably will go to extra time, if not penalties. I think 1-1, maybe 0-0. I think it's going to be extremely tense. That England have won a penalty shootout now, bizarrely, makes me almost confident going into penalties, which feels, I can't get used to the feeling of being confident that if it went to penalties, but that might give us an edge that we've just done it and come through a tie in that way. So I think it's got a very good chance of going all the way.
Yeah, and with that, we are now out of time. I just want to wish Thomas the best of luck for Saturday, whatever
not
happens.
Not too much luck.
Not too much luck, but, but we'll see what happens. I'm sure we'll get you back on to talk about that game after it has taken place. But if you guys just want to tell people where they can reach you, now would be a good time.
I'm Thomas Nygren. You can find me on Twitter @ Thomas Nygren, and I write texts for lfcsv.se, and this week we put up an interview with the former Liverpool defender David Raven, who is it's in English, so if you're interested in Liverpool or if you're interested in David Raven's career, you can look it up.
Yeah, I've been Jamie Smith. I cover football for Omnisport News. You can follow me on Twitter at Jamie Smith Sport, where no doubt I'll be live tweeting my way into madness on Saturday during the game.
Yeah, you can get the show on Twitter at EPL Roundtable, or you can email the show eplroundtable@gmail.com. We'll be back again after the quarterfinals, and thanks so much for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.